our format is that we have four panelists who are, as I said, primers of the conversation, not necessarily experts any more than any of the rest of us. Each of them will be asked to make about a 5-minute opening statement, and then the conversation is opened to all of you. If it gets lively and people are just going, you don't need to raise up your hand and wait for me if that doesn't seem to be necessary. Okay, when it's 5 minutes before 9:30, I'll say something like, any last words? Who's been waiting to get in? And that will be an indication that we're coming near the end. The topic announced for today is how busy is too busy at home and at Holden? I'd like to tell you a little bit about where that topic came from, how that percolated to the top. One of the things about time is that it's a resource that is absolutely equally distributed. Everybody gets the same number of hours in a day, but it's a very limited one. You can't make more and you can't make less. And so there are lots of questions about how we use it. People come to Holden Village, which says in its mission statement something about a time for renewal and refreshment, and say, I left my daytimer at home. How am I ever going to keep track of this? Right? They look at the board, it's changing all the time, and say, I have to make a decision every hour. This feels busy, and I wanted to relax. One of our panelists observed earlier in the week that's her first visit to Holden, and that she thought there wasn't much listening going on. We were all using our time talking, and that might be a sign of being busy. Other people say about Holden that it's really much slower than the rest of their lives, that they relax, that they come to a different pace. Maybe even that there's a sort of Sabbath quality to being here. So those are some of the questions, the discussions that have led us to this point. The four people who will start us off tonight are, and we'll hear from them in this order, Gary Borges, who's a parish pastor and has been involved in spiritual direction. Carrie Donner, who is has been living at Holden since March and acts as assistant program director and assistant for worship. Legis Spicer, who is here on the teaching staff from South Dakota, Watertown, where she directs a Peace and Justice Center. And Chuck Lutz, who is a journalist and lay theologian, and the spouse of a board member, as is Gary.
Former board member. Oh. Just but yes, the last 12 years.
I thought I felt the earth shift yesterday.
Power has shifted.
Okay, well, with that, we'll start it. And about 5 minutes. If you start going on to seven, I'll...
Okay. Maybe just a word about what spiritual direction is. I think the concept is getting around. There was an article in the Lutheran here a few issues ago about spiritual direction. Spiritual direction is basically walking with a person in their spiritual journey. It's not counseling. We're not counselors. The difference, I think, is helpful to me. A counselor focuses on that person and their development. Spiritual director walks with that person and reflects with that person on what God is doing in their life. And so we're not there primarily to offer resources, but primarily there to simply be a mirror, to kind of bounce things off and reflect what God is doing. As a wondering where to start with this, I thought as a Lutheran, maybe a good place would be the Bible and Psalm 46. And if you remember Psalm 46, does that ring any bells? Mm-hmm. Why that is famous?
Luther's one of Luther's favorites.
He based a mighty fortress.
Both of the mighty fortress came from. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Let me read that because it says something about time and about our need for some space. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, the mountains shake, and the heart of the sea catches the imagery here. Though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult, there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her right early. The nations rage. The kingdoms totter. He utters his voice. The earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has wrought desolations in the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow, shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. There's peace, but there's violence in all this. And then, in quotes, be still and know that I am God. And I think there's this is a passage that to me is very key to the whole thing, our spiritual journey. I checked with one of our Hebrew scholars to make sure I was exact on this today. And the word know, as I assume, means that coming to know another being is from the very center of our being going into the center of that person's being, and that person's being coming into our center. It's the word that's used in the Bible for the intimacy of sexual intercourse between husband and wife, a very intimate, Adam knew Eve, Abraham was it, knew Sarah. And so,
I think so.
Can I get it right? Yeah. Okay. So it's this intimacy that we come, and much of our spirituality often is left brain. What this means, though, is that we need to take time. And I guess from my perspective, I'd like to share, is that we need to take time, whether that's outside in our daily jobs or here at Holden, simply to be still. Much of our society gauges our worth on productivity and busyness. And I sometimes think we're gauged, our worth is gauged more in busyness than even productivity. And when I walk around the village and listen, I hear a lot of comments about what you do today. And that's okay. But there's almost that sense that you have to be doing something to make your stay at Holden worthwhile. And there are people who simply do stop and experience it. One person shared with me once that God made us human beings, not human doings. And I think it takes discipline. In spiritual direction, we do urge people to take at least a half hour a day in silence. I won't go into all that. In meditation. We see books today in bookstores of angels, on near-death experiences, and on meditation. And we as Christians have had those things in the church, but we've kind of forgotten those things. We've become very left brain. And we need to simply take time to be still. We take time for our jobs, for recreation, for our spouses, for our children. If God is important to us, we need take time for Him, to be with this good friend. And then we'll see God and everything else that goes on. Could say more, but
thanks, Kevin. Well, when I was thinking about this whole idea and what it means to me, I was reminded of an old friend of my brother's who used to stop in at my brother's shop and just rock in the chair for a while and chat about things. And sometimes their conversation was about what you do or what you have to do today, what brings you into town, since he was coming from the farm. And I happened to be there one day when he said, I got to get my sitting around done first. That's why I came in here. And he was making a long list of the things that he was going to be doing. And first on his list was take a nap. Because he thought that that was evidently the most important thing for him to get done out of all those things on the list. And I have laughed at him a lot, but I've also remembered those words a lot because it's become important to me, too, to remember to take the time to step back and rest a little bit. I was also thinking about what makes me feel busy and realized that it's not always having a lot to do, because if what I'm doing is very meaningful to me, I can do a lot of it without feeling terribly busy. I recognize also that there are just necessary things to be done. They don't necessarily add a lot of meaning to my life, but they're simply necessary to be done. And so I guess I do them without thinking, or with, I try sometimes to have a sense of appreciation for being able to participate in some of those simple and elemental things of daily life. I also recognize that what influences the feeling of busyness for me has something to do also with the number of choices that I have to make, or the number of decisions that I have to make about what I'm doing. And in that vein, having a person at a restaurant ask me not only whether I want soup or salad, but which of seven choices do I want of salad dressing, and how do I want my potato done, sometimes just drives me nutty.
That's a
yes. Also by the rhythm of my activity. If you know, I can do this type of activity for a while and then switch and do another type of activity, but if I have to do too much of it for too long, then that makes me feel busy. And I also seem to be influenced by the specific environment in which I work, the particular kind of lighting, the hum of machinery, the number of people around me. And a lot of times I do best for a longer period of time with a lot less of that. And so I feel less busy if I'm in a quieter environment. Any change in that situation requires, of course, it's a fruit basket upset, and it changes the rhythm of what you do. I came here in March and had been in sort of a limbo situation, I guess, since about September before that, but you just have to learn some new rhythms, and it takes a while to get into that. So especially during that time, you feel busy while you're learning how all of that is doing. I thought also it would be really nice sometimes if people would get affirmation for doing nothing. What are you doing? I met a child on the sidewalk today, and I happened to ask him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm just standing here." And I had a chance to give them an affirmation for saying, "I'm just standing here." So I did that because I had just been thinking about that and thought that it would be really nice sometimes to be asked or to be affirmed for responding, "I'm not doing anything," and letting that be okay, not feeling that I should be doing something, or that doing something would have been a better response. I also read something recently that I want to add to what I say. We mostly spend our lives conjugating three verbs: to want, to have, and to do. None of these verbs has any significance except so far as they are transcended by and excluded in the fundamental verb to be. Being, not wanting, having, and doing, is the essence of spiritual life. And so that'll go on.
Thank you.
I'm a very newcomer to Holden. I've been here now 5 days. I'm astounded. It's just been a very special experience. I don't quite know what I expected, but I do know that in some ways I've received more than I expected, and in some ways less. Something that has been very wonderful has been the setting here, the mountains, the hiking, getting to meet you, getting to discuss things with you in classes, etc. And a definite sense that people here are really thinking about things and trying to think what might be better ways to go about things. But a question that I asked myself soon after I got here was the question between internal and external authority. and the question of how can I be true to my center and still fulfill expectations which Holden Village might have of me on the teaching staff. And I talked to Randy Ornis and Jim about this afternoon for a while, and mentioned that it seemed to me that we need to ask the question, are we transporting the culture into the village, or are we hoping for the possibility of transformation within the village? And I personally feel that the transformation is probably what many people would say is something that you would pray for. And my question is, without having more silence, and as has already been said, more periods of quiet, I don't quite know how that possibly could happen, because there is a great deal of listening that needs to go on here that is not going on. I'm a Lutheran, and there have already been some things I can't participate in because I hear the mountain speaking and I don't hear us listening. I think we're very much people-oriented, and this is a place to begin to get better in touch with the earth. And I think that's what's being required of us in this culture. And I just hope that maybe we can find ways, whether we know them personally or people can help them with this so that we can do this. And again, I just want to say thank you. I'm very glad to be here. It's just been a pleasure, in spite of some concerns that I have.
Thanks. Chuck?
Well, when you asked me if I would be on this panel, I was thinking about a Bible study earlier this week when we talked about limits, and the limits on our first parents, and the rebellion against God setting limits. And Deanne mentioned that it was kind of, this forum would be kind of in the context of people saying that there's too much to do at Holden, and we've got to make tough choices, and why is it so active and so busy, and why are these all these choices before us? And in fact, one person said yesterday in a discussion that some of us were at that it would be better if, as far as he was concerned, if we came to Holden and there was a set program, and everybody did that program, and you didn't have to make choices. And that got me to thinking about the nature of human existence and human activity, and that all of life is made up of, I guess, of making choices and of having limits on what we can do. And it seemed to me that, at least to reflect theologically a little bit on that, we tend to view limits as, I guess, Adam and Eve did, as onerous or tyrannical. Who is this God who sets limits on what we can partake of? But I like to look at limits as full of grace and as liberating. And so it's kind of along that line that I'd like to reflect for the few minutes that I have. Limits as liberation. And my analogy for it is really not Holden, but back home and my own professional life. As a journalist, as a media person, it seems to me that media people always have to deal with the limits of either space or time restraints. There is never enough space if you're in print journalism, as I am, or if you're a writer. You always have a length limit to write to. You can't go beyond X hundred or X thousand words, you're told. There has to come an end. And if you're editing a print vehicle, your limits are column inches. There is never enough space, at least in my experience, there's never enough space to print everything you'd like to print. Well, that can be viewed as burdensome, or it can be viewed as liberating, because you have to come to an end point and decide, well, this is in and this is out, and this isn't going to make it till the next issue, or it's never going to make it. It's never going to see print. And I think it's attitudinal. I think that can be viewed as burden or as freeing. It's the same, I'm told, with broadcast media, though I don't work in that field. There the limit is time. You always have to make decisions about how much you can fit into the time available, whether it's radio or television, or I guess even film, although films seem to be getting longer and longer, feature films. But even there's a limit to how long people will sit to watch a film, and the limit is basically one of time, of minutes or seconds. All media people, and I guess all people, in fact, deal with deadlines. And I view deadlines as liberating, not as limiting in the sense of being burdens, but as freeing. Because there comes a point where you have to say, this has got to go to the printer today, and I can't delay any longer making decisions about what's going to be in or out. Or this has to be ready for airing in 30 minutes, and I can't fuss around any longer. Just imagine what it would be like if we did not have deadlines. I think it would be much more tyrannical and burdensome for us. So I would like to suggest, using the analogy of media, that limits of time and space and limits which deadlines represent can be liberating and freeing. And I think when we look at the kiosk, we ought to view the choices that we make there, or are compelled to make because there are so many options, as not burdensome but as liberating, as freeing. Part of the grace of God, it seems to me, in setting limits for human beings is that, and I don't know what it's going to be like in the afterlife, if there will be limits or not, but in this life there are limits, and I think we ought to view them positively, and I think we ought to view the fact that God really requires us to make choices because we cannot do everything in the time and space available, as grace-filled rather than as law. So that's, I think, enough for this point.
Well, lots of directions this can go. I invite the rest of you now to come into this conversation about busyness and how we use our time, how our time use shapes us.
I guess just a few thoughts. I kind of see the topic on the board there is two different things. And I've been coming to Holden Village for a long time, for periods of a few days to a few months. And I've always viewed the experience here, as I try to tell somebody about who hasn't been here, or as I reflect on somebody who has, is it's one of the few places where we stop and stand still long enough to listen to one another. As opposed to meeting somebody on the street, hi, how are you? I'm fine, how are you? I'm fine, off you go. Both of you hurting, and neither one of you wanting to say anything. Whereas here, in fact, sometimes you do get to know someone or seriously visit with them. And I viewed it as the, perhaps what you were talking about, of the options on that board over there, and the options are even on the board, yeah. It's an excellent place for a group, such as a family, we talked about this evening in the Vespers, a family of children of varying ages to come, and we found that when our kids were young enough to come with us, that a youngster could go to a program with the junior minors, my spouse might go to a craft deal, and I might sit and contemplate a chipmunk chasing a pine cone around all afternoon, and in fact I had that choice and exercised it, so I guess I view the choices as liberating rather than limiting. It's a place to tailor it, and if you think you have to do everything, then you haven't, turned off your alarm clock.
Yeah.
You brought your alarm clock with you. You probably had to go home.
I find that nothing is more tyrannical in a home than the calendar that I come in and the secretary lays out all of these things of which I have no choice. Mm. I must show up and do. And that, that's one of those things that we, that's why they pay us to give up some of our freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I come to Holden, the option to take a nap is something that I can decide to have. And it is, as you have put it, a freeing choice. Or if I'm awake, I have not one but two sessions to go to.
I've often thought that
Yeah, maybe we should have instructions for reading the kiosk.
It's how to read it.
You know, one of the things that I've always experienced a great deal of freedom to do is to know that I could pick all or nothing. You know, that one of the options is to sit on the porch and watch the mountains to see if they move. And that's always been very, very free. Plus, would also comment that in the choice of options, that there's also something that I have found very freeing and very restful in the kind of busyness that I find here, because time after time after time, when I plug in sessions, what I find is not triviality, but substance and meaning, and something of significance. And when I find myself plugging into things that are significant, that's not draining for me. That is rather empowering and enlivening. And so, you know, while I look at the kiosk and I plug into a lot of things, at the end of the day, I don't feel drained by it like I do at home after a day of meetings. I rather come away feeling enlivened and empowered by it.
So you're picking up on some of the things we've already heard about how much compulsion there is, and also the meaningfulness of what you're doing makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I think the perspective is very different as a guest or a teaching staff versus the people that are working here for 2 years. And my observation, and I could be wrong, but my observation is some of the people that have been working here for over a year and often are dealing with small children look very tired, like they've been very busy every day of the week.
Small children.
Well, that's true, but there are families here with small, 2 and 3 small children, and the workload sounds different than what we often have at our home jobs, because oftentimes we're just working 5 days a week and we go home. Mm-hmm. And it's like Holden is one big house, and you know, you don't have a phone throughout your house, so you don't pick up the phone and call somebody in the basement and ask them to come upstairs. And it's like here, you don't have a phone to talk to somebody in the lodge when you're in Chalet 8, you know. And so it's like one big house, and you're not going home. And so some people seem to be working a whole lot more all day long because of demands, especially in the summer. So it's a different perspective, I would guess.
Yeah, so that if instead of saying at Holden or at home, if you say when Holden is home, how busy is too busy?
Yes.
It appears that it's a different situation for guests and teaching staff than it is for long-term staff.
It's really an issue whether Holden is your vacation or Holden is your job.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've been here when it was my job, and was as busy, not for that long a term, but I mean for months at a time.
Yeah.
And I think you're right.
This, I think, brings us back to your point about what's the purpose of Holden. How do we use time at Holden, and is it either for those who come on vacation or those who come to live and work? Is it a mirror of what goes on in American life generally, where busyness rather than productivity is the key, where there isn't time, where half an hour a day of stillness seems like an extraordinary commitment? You know, how could you ever find half an hour to do nothing, to just stand there?
Okay, a little bit in response to you and to Barbara. I think it's not just the long-term staff that work very, very hard here and are extremely busy. I've been on staff here at times when I've worked harder than anything I've ever done in my life and never been happier. Fallen on my bed with my boots hanging over the ends and just slept all through dinner. And mostly because I wanted to be awake for something else that was going on in the evening. And so at home, I can work really feverishly in an office all day, come home to my house, and then I'm kind of just tuned out. I just veg out, and I don't have anything else meaningful going on until the next morning by 8:30 when I start the whole thing again. But here, I can work myself into just this incredibly dirty mass of tiredness and still want to take part in something else that's going on later in the day. Mm. So it's a whole different use of energy and time, dedication of those somehow.
You always say that maybe in the village, at least, not outside, that we are all different people and with different needs, and some have a need, you know, to do that kind of thing, and others have a need to pull back. And maybe somehow in the day, at least to provide a time for those who simply want that side of staff, you know, as well as guests. And that's not right now in the schedule.
Are you saying that isn't here, though?
I was wondering about staff. Yes, I think we can do it. I'm not sure staff can. But
I find this is no different than at my in my office where I've got reports coming in from 16 different countries. You know, I don't just shut off the phones. It's my fault, you know. And if I don't take that hour first thing in the morning as I do, I can't blame anybody else.
Well, I was going to agree with Mark. We came up here as a family for 7 or 8 years, as guests, and got used to that routine when we came here. And then we came up, the first year we came up as volunteers. And what we tried to do was, hey, we're going to do everything we did as guests and volunteer. Well, about that first week, you know, you're exhausted. You feel like you're not here. You feel like you're back home. And we had to stop and say, you know, what is this all about? And I, you know, I think you need to go back to what Holden says all along. Holden is what you make it, what you give to it, and what you get from it. And you're the only one that can control that. And I think we need to continue to offer everything for the variety of people we have there. And, you know, you make it for what you want it to be. If you want to have that hour of silence, you've got to find that hour of silence. If you want to listen for an hour, you're the one that's going to listen. And Holden still is what you make it.
Maybe that's what we need to have on the kiosk. Our mission to view it that way?
These things are awesome.
Why do we have to give people permission to do it that way? Yeah. People have a different expectation when they come.
Presuppositions.
Yeah, just presuppositions, and it's a free thing.
None of us need to be busier than we'll let ourselves be, either at work or at Holden Village. I mean, if I only want to go to work every day and come home and veg out or watch the Idiot Box, I can do that. But if I choose to run for church council, I'm foolish enough to get elected to that. You know, I go to that a couple nights a month. And then if I'm even more foolish, let them elect me to be the treasurer, and I go down there 3 or 4 nights a week and pay the bill if there's any money. But I can only be as busy as I'll let myself be. And just as you say, you can insist on your hour in the morning before you pay attention to the outside world. And the same is true here. I can be as busy as I'll let myself be, and no one else can make me unbusy.
Well, I just want to reiterate what Marilyn said, and that's just the fact that, you know, we came for a week and we tried to do as much as we possibly could. We still do the same amount of stuff that we did, it's just that it takes us 4 weeks to do it. So, you know, there's a lot more time involved, or a lot more time for us to do things that, you know, don't require a lot of that. I think it's important that you realize that. And when we came as guests, we decided you have to go to all these sessions. You got to go to this lake, kind of go to that lake, go to that lake. So we could do it for a week. And now we do the same things, but like you said, it takes 4 weeks. Also, another comment too is that working where I work, I hear lots of announcements. I hear them 3 or 4 times a day. One of the things that's always announced is at 2:00, it's siesta time.
Yeah.
They always say it. Most of the announcers say it, and it's or if you don't want to see us, there's press. 2:00 is kind of a downtime. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should make it more of a point to say, take a half hour off and go watch a squirrel play with the probably not pine cone, probably not a couple of brownies or something like that. Still, maybe we should make more of a point of telling people to relax.
Bill, you're again, you're going to that relationship between the external community and the individual. That there is, yeah, we can all make our own decisions, but what's around us?
But I think there's an undercurrent of another theme here that comes up, and that's the role of solitude and silence in the midst of community. And it's something that if people work it into what they do at home and are at home, you don't notice. It's not, you know, if someone says, oh, look over there, he's being silent. I don't know whether we work very hard at understanding the role of these things. And, maybe we need more intentional ways of approaching it.
And we don't practice that also as much as we do practice busyness.
Well, the chimes are starting to go, I'm sorry.
Ingrid and then Karen, I think.
I sometimes wonder whether we could, I try to envision a Holden that is more retreat-like, and I think we could do away with all bells. You know, if we could have a stack of watches that we could loan out to people. We could do away with all announcements. I don't feel that I need to be told what the afternoon schedule is, and we could maybe have announcements at one meal a day for the kinds of announcements that had to go on. And you could even have a day when it was the second setting of each meal or certain times of each meal would be silent, where everybody would agree not to talk. And it could, so a day when you could go through a whole day without talking at all. It seems like it'd be kind of sort of fun in this place to try some other kinds of rhythms than imposed noise and lots of being talked at and I think over being talked at. I don't think we need all those announcements that we have.
Let them read the chaos for themselves.
Yeah. Karen.
Put it on the chaos and let them read it.
One of the things I always struggle with, and I'm back to the fact that I think it's a personal thing, the habits of the outside world you do bring to the village, and it takes a little while to push them. I still have a lot of oughts. I should be doing this. You know, so a good friend whom I really admire is doing sessions, and I really should be at those sessions. And I find it hard sometimes to balance what I would like to do with what I think I should do, even here, like at home. But it's easier to control here. I think out in that other world, our information overload is really getting to all of us. I think it's part of our problem. You know, the voicemail, the email, the computer thing where you want answers right away. You aren't content with waiting for 5 days or 7 days for an answer from something. You want it right now. And we're all
the
seeking to keep, yeah, the faxes, you know, we're seeking to keep up with that. And it's a deadly thing. We at least here we're away from some of that stuff. But you still come with some of those bad habits for a while. And I think the busyness, yes, you're in control of it, but we are also a product of our culture and our society, and it's really hard sometimes to make. We still value being an extrovert much more than we value being an introvert. And we reward that. The more money you make, the more degrees you have hanging after your name, the more, you know, those are the people who sort of get rewarded, and the quieter person, like someone mentioned, that person over there, being quiet, is not the person held up for admiration.
Quite common. I think this whole thing, again, the emphasis on the interior and the time of silence. There's a quote that I have in my journal that I'm not sure where I got this, but it's to the effect that unless that which is above you controls that which is within you, that which is around you will. And I think that's what you're saying.
Say that again.
That unless that which is above you controls that which is within you, that which is around you will. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying, Karen, in our culture, that which is around us, we're all vulnerable to that. And we need that time of being still so that we can have that sense of the God who is within, who would that we really want to direct us as people and take control of our lives again, and not that which is without.
Just a little side comment. Maybe someone mentioned maybe we don't value the silence that much or take time. Maybe part of it is just respecting the fact that that is an option for people. You know, sometimes we come here and we say we love to sit outside somewhere and read, but you can't because you're always running to someone, you end up talking to them. So as a result, we want to read, we just sit in our room all the time.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to talk to people, we love that too. But maybe it would be okay to say, I'd just like to be quiet for a minute, and I'd just like to read for a short time here without feeling hurting someone's feelings. You know. So maybe it's just respecting that option.
Instead of issuing watches, we'll also issue buttons that say, be quiet.
Or maybe we can get from a hotel supply those do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
We've got a lot of messages to put on the kiosk.
Yes, go ahead. Ask everyone.
Well, no, I've been waiting to hear from you, sir, for quite a while, and I still haven't heard what you wanted to say. What is your name?
I'm Dan.
Hi, Dan. What was on your mind?
Well, basically, I think a key to all this is mutual support in this endeavor. I mean, it's true that we are in control ultimately of how we deal with busyness, but if we don't have support from others around us in dealing with that busyness, you know, it's all a part of community. You know, if we don't have the community supporting us in our efforts to clean out some of this business in our lives, it's going to be for naught. I think most of us aren't that so strong we can do it without the support of others. I think that's crucial. I sense that, you know, here at Holden Village, as being a long-term employee here, and being very, very busy, particularly right now. My experience of this place is probably radically different than the experience of most people here. I feel extremely busy and sometimes frazzled. And I sometimes wish for better support to try to unbusy myself. But there isn't that support, unfortunately, I think. But this is true, I think, of many people. Everyone else could say this in your own workplaces, too, that there just isn't the institutional support for unbusying yourself. And it's true here. Unfortunately, the culture really is transported into Holden in that regard for a lot of long-term staff. You know, it's no different. Really.
I go back to my job with the fact that the limits, and I remember you said it, the limits in my job are free. Because I have almost everything I do in my particular workspace here has limits.
Maybe you could, for those who don't recognize you without your guard. Yeah.
I work in the dining hall, and my apron's not on right now. So everything, I have a section to work for, but then when I get to this point, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to not have to take any of my homework home. I don't have to take your judicious homework. Yeah. So that's why I carry this around.
And that's different than what you do during the rest of the year.
I teach school the rest of the year in the real world. Mm-hmm. The main reason I come here. Mm-hmm.
I just like to say that I really affirm what Dan has said, and I hear it as a clear call for some support from the community to maybe make the work here less busy than in the outside world. And of course, the whole word busy is a debatable word. I would say a wrong word. There's nothing in the scripture that I understand that affirms the is more or less. And that's why I think her point up above was so well taken. You can work very hard, be very tired, and be very satisfied in resting in God's grace. It's not how much you're doing something, it is in whom are you resting while you're doing it, and are we doing it with each other, at least with some of us? That's, or are we feeling isolated and weird? I think perhaps that's part of what this is about.
When I was here in the winter time, last winter for just 1 week, it was my first experience of home. You know what I like best? It was the day, I mean, I call it in my mind the nothing day. That was the day nothing happened in the village. And we as guests, we didn't even know what this was all about. People told us nothing's going to happen tomorrow. So we get food. Yeah. There's a reaching and granola is there, and yeah. I said, fine, good. There wasn't even coffee in the morning. I was a little disappointed. But, you know, I loved it. I don't know, this is, you don't have that anymore at all here in the summertime. That smells really wonderful. I didn't see a soul, staff, or it was hiding somewhere, I don't know, in the lodges, so I didn't see anybody.
I'm wondering, did you get any coffee?
If all the guests here, this has come up before, yeah, I'm wondering that how you people that are guests here, how you would feel about it if we would have a stop day in the summer. Would you be angry? A lot of us on staff, we bring it up, and somebody else on staff says, but people are always saying, I pay good money to come here. And here there are no sessions today, you know? And, you know, how would you feel about that? If there was just, maybe you didn't understand what she was saying, a stop day is when you just don't do anything. Except we try to eat a little bit to keep alive. You know? That's about it.
Well, Jim, I think Saturday and Sunday have always been less program filled, and maybe we can go even farther with those 2 days without eliminating everything. My hunch is that a day with no program offerings at all would be resented by some of the guests. Yeah. Who figure they weren't getting their money's worth or whatever.
But what about the principle of Sabbath? Does that work somehow into combining nothing, which is sort of sounds like a vacuum, with rest, the principle of rest, and then worship? I mean, those things and the way they work together, could that feasibly be a very low program day, but building in the Sabbath and then the Eucharist somehow?
Probably for everybody but Jim.
It sounds to me like you're trying to solve two sets of problems that are not really well, no, I don't think they can be thrown into the same barrel. I think.
What are those 10?
Well, no, one is a staffing problem. You know, I appreciate Jim's suggestion. When I was in the parish, I would have loved Sundays off. but I think, you know, some people like members of the church council would be really upset. And I know a guy, in fact, who said, you guys aren't coming regularly. He mowed the lawn during services. And the bishop on Monday morning.
A pastor.
Yeah.
A
pastor. I just see, I see two totally different sets of needs. And that the staff, if the staff needs to do some rotating of individual times off and things like that, that can be done if it's approached right.
Yeah, you know, my sense is that there's a not so subtle peer pressure from fellow guests to participate in a significant number of the programs that are made available. I have elected not to participate in some days, and having a down day, much as Jim has described, my sense is that if the board thinks that that's a good thing for people to do that, then it would not be inappropriate for the board to do that as a policy rather than getting input from the members. If you think that's a good thing, you should just do it. My perception is that if you didn't want to do that, you could
underscore the optionality of participating in the program and affirming that it's okay to be yourself and do as much or little as you want. My sense is that that message is a general proposition is not coming out there, but rather the fairly strong understanding is that you're going to participate in a significant measure of the things that are available.
There's another way that what Jim has brought up emphasizes the way holiness, like the rest of the world, which is that some people's ability to make choices and to decide to be busy or to be still or to do this or to do that depends on somebody else having to do things. So that the guests can decide when to eat and when to do that because the staff is there making sure that there's food and all of those things that allow those who are here on vacation or retreat to do that. And so there's another community factor that I'm hearing. Not only what Dan said about the people around us in a sort of mutuality, supporting one set of standards or another, but there's a structural community thing that's going on between those who live here and provide this gift and the hospitality of the place and those who come.
But again, that's a choice those of us that are on staff make, early on.
Yeah.
For as long as the village has been, had a program, every piece of publicity I've ever seen says, we offer this, we offer this, we offer this as a community, you're expected to come and be vespers. Okay. And that's the only thing I've ever felt I had to come to.
That's right.
And I've been here for most of the week, and this is the first session I've been to, and I'm not the least bit guilty, guilty about anything else. But to say that let's have a down day, that says, well, let's have a down day as an excuse for a day off for everybody, except somebody's still going to drive the bus to the lake and back. I know I've been there. Somebody's still going to sort mail because the U.S. Postal Contract says you're going to. Somebody's still going to wash the dirty dishes. We're going to trouble. Somebody's still going to go check the hydro twice a day. Somebody's still going to go up and check the water at least once a day. So all you've done is said, well, those of you who already had scheduled days off anyway, you all get another one, but those who already had this 7-day-week job, you got to keep working. And so I think this is just like my home. If I choose to work 6 days every week or 7 days a week, I can do that. I'm still just as far behind as if I worked 5 days a week. And some of you laugh because you know exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. I think you have to realize that here at the village, some people have some day off or this morning. You don't have tomorrow breakfast, for instance, and as a way try, and you take advantage of that and you choose to sleep in or get up and do whatever. And I think that's the only way it can work. As a guest, I would be very disappointed if I came here and said, well, this is the day we aren't doing anything, come get some dry cereal if you want. And that's about as thrilling.
Even though you don't go to sessions, you'd be disappointed.
I have the choices.
I think it's a comment on the encroachment of the culture that we find ourselves after how many years holding, thinking, well, maybe we have to point out to people that these are optional. there is, I think, something going on in the culture that because it's there, we have to do it. That somehow we're not complete people if our calendar isn't full from morning to night.
Yeah. One of the things I enjoy about walking around this place is seeing so many people just hanging out. And they aren't. I want to tell you something. As one of the teachers, we do not have standing room only in any session I've sat. And that's not a complaint. That's just to say, this thing may be working better than you folks think.
I said I would tell you when there are 5 minutes, so that those of you who have been waiting to see if someone else would say what you were thinking. And if they haven't, now is your chance.
I don't know why a person feels guilty if they aren't doing something. I feel that way sometimes. And I haven't up here, but at home I do. I think, what am I sitting here for? I should be doing something. And that's bad. But
you're probably a Lutheran.
In reference to what she said, though. I don't see when I'm just sitting there that I'm doing nothing. I'm learning about the mountains, just the people around me, what they're doing, the animals, how they work. You know, we watched after the outside barbecue the other day, the squirrels there, they cleaned up the whole ground there. I spent 20 minutes watching them. I didn't feel like I was doing nothing. I felt like I was learning something about God's creatures or watching the deer around here. So that your resting time, I think, is what God wants to be. He wants to be your resting, but not, you're not inert.
No, up here
at the same time.
I rest and I enjoy it. It's just at home that I feel like I should be up dusting or doing something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here it's different.
Of course, while your choices
world to watch at home.
Yeah. While your choices at home are different, you can still give yourself the same limits and options to do nothing.
I'll feel much better now.
As a long-term staff at home that I've been here a year, one of the ways that I've learned how to take care of myself, because not only do we have our job, but then we have all these little tasks, stoking, dishing. Mm-hmm. And in order to have a day off, a full day off, you have got to, which is different than the outside world, you have to switch all these things around, and that takes time to switch those things around, so you do have a full day off. And the only way that I feel like I can really have a day off is to go to stay in my room or go out of the village. And I think also some of us have jobs where we're on call all the time. I mean, some people work, they're 6 hours and they're done, and then they can go for half a day. And so if some of us that are on call and we have to be available all the time, I think that is really important, to be able to take care of yourself and say no and not always go to all the activities. Because in the wintertime, there's activities all the time. I haven't quite figured that out, if that's to keep us busy so we don't go crazy.
Just break in once more. Gail, you've raised another community individual dynamic, though, that when you're not living in community, there's no one to trade with. You know? Yeah. So on your day off, you do the laundry and wash the floor. I tell my students the thing I'm most excited about being on sabbatical is I'm going to have clean bathrooms and time to give a dinner party. They look at me like, God, that's weird. But there's no one to trade with, so it doesn't get done. Bill, did you want back in? One of the really great things about Holden and community is that there's always someone to talk to if you want to, and that the conversation doesn't stop when you leave a room. So I hope that you'll take time to talk with each other more about this and just sit and think about it a little bit by yourself if you want to. Thanks for coming.